You are listening to the Forgotten News Podcast.
But before we begin, here are a few words about a couple of other podcasts that we think you might want to try.
Hi, I'm Molly.
And I'm Abigail.
We're sisters.
And we believe in ghosts.
Welcome to Supernatural Sisters, a podcast all about ghostly encounters, bone-chilling monsters, and basically anything that goes bump in the night.
This isn't a podcast about the show Supernatural, though we could devote hours to those good chiseled jawlines.
Mm-hmm. Each week, we talk about a haunted place, a legendary monster, or a story that sends shivers down our spines.
And the 2011 show, Ghostly Lovers.
We're not going to talk about Ghostly Lovers.
We'll mention the 2011 show, Ghostly Lovers.
We also want to hear your experiences. We'll be featuring stories from friends, family, and listeners.
Because honestly, those freak us out the most.
And maybe we'll talk about the pottery scene from Ghost.
He's not a ghost in that scene. There are other parts of that movie where he's a ghost.
Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
And remember, we believe you.
September 1978, serial killer Rodney Alcala appears on the dating game.
February 1994, 34 hospital workers are exposed to an unexplained toxic lady.
March 2022, Experian emails a Los Angeles podcaster about a mysterious credit score change, completely unjustified.
Wait, did we cover that?
I mean, we could have. I said it was mysterious.
Okay, we're Ghost Town, and we cover true crime, paranormal, and other weird history.
The cult of Capital One.
But here's one more date. July 2018, a trailer drops for a new podcast called Ghost Town. Over 300 episodes later, we've covered everything from the Los Feliz murder house to the Noid.
Ever hear of the Tetris murders or the Denver Spider-Man or the underground satanic magazine Tuesday's Child?
Didn't think so. We've got stories you won't hear anywhere else by two writers, producers, and comedians.
We're LA 4s, but Wisconsin 7s.
Hey, I'm from Wisconsin.
Oh.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
Available every Wednesday and Friday.
Pause the podcast you're listening to right now and subscribe to Ghost Town.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
You're a Wisconsin 8.
Hmm.
Welcome to the Forgotten News Podcast. This is your window to hear true stories from long ago. Stories that once made headlines. Stories that people thought would be unforgettable. Yet those stories were soon lost in the sands of time or were buried deep in the dustbin of history. In this podcast, we shake off the sand and dust from those stories and share them here with you, as fresh as the day they were first told.
And now, here's your host.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode number 4 of the Forgotten News Podcast. My name is Jim, and as usual, I'm going to start by thanking all of you for listening. I'm excited to let you know that the audience for our show is growing every week. We have also gotten some very nice reviews on iTunes. And speaking of iTunes, I promised on the last episode that we would give a shout out to anyone who left us a review. And we will be doing that near the end of this episode. I'm also very thrilled to let you know that we have now reached over 1,800 downloads. That is an incredible 50% increase since our last episode. I think, with any luck, we might have more than 2,000 downloads in the near future. And I have nothing but gratitude towards every person for listening. I can't thank you, the audience, enough. And I hope you will continue to listen in the future. With that having been said, I guess the best thanks I can give is for me to wrap up this introduction and to move along with the episode. So, here we go. You may remember that on our last show, we featured a true crime story. And because of that, I promised that this episode would be something lighter, something fun, and that is just what this is going to be. Now, before I begin, we are at the point in the show where I usually mention whether there is going to be anything scary or upsetting in the episode or anything that might need a warning for listeners. Well, I don't think there is anything like that in this episode, but just to be sure, let me ask my assistant, because I like to have a second opinion about this stuff. Hey, Annabelle.
Yes, Jim?
Do we have a need for any kind of a warning for this episode?
No, Jim. There will be nothing scary or upsetting in this episode, so I don't think there is any need for a listener warning.
I agree. I don't think there's anything in this episode that would frighten anybody or would trigger any kind of bad emotional reaction in anyone.
I think this episode will just be something fun for people to listen to.
So, with that having been said, on with the show. Our story begins in western Ohio, near the border with Indiana. Actually, that's not true. Although nearly all of our story will take place in Ohio in 1897, it really begins in Sacramento, California, on the evening of November 17, 1896. On that date, numerous residents of Sacramento reported seeing bright lights in the sky, moving slowly over the city. A few people stared and took a closer look, including some with telescopes, and they reported that they were not just bright lights in the sky, but that the lights were attached to a flying machine, which the newspapers almost immediately began describing with the word airship. According to newspaper reports from the time, this object was seen in the sky from approximately 6 to 7 p.m. until it slowly drifted out of sight. But during the time period that it was visible, the people who were certain that they had seen an airship included the district attorney and a deputy sheriff. A few hours later, the craft was observed in the sky over San Francisco, as reported in local newspapers the next day, which also stated that it had been seen by hundreds of witnesses, including the mayor. And November the 17th was definitely not the last time that sightings were reported. Throughout the rest of that month, there were numerous news articles reporting on sightings of an airship over various other cities and towns in California and Washington State. The stories continued through early February 1897, then suddenly stopped. But once winter ended, the sightings began again in April and continued through May, with reports of an airship being seen in various places over Texas, Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Missouri, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. Now, looking back at these reports, perhaps the most intriguing thing about the sightings is the fact that they seem to contradict the standard history that everyone is taught in school. Specifically, that the first successful motorized aircraft was flown by William and Orville Wright in 1903 at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, as well as the fact, the undisputed fact, that the plane, which was built by the Wright brothers, had flew only 59 seconds, which is a striking contrast to the many newspaper reports of long leisurely flights by the airship. Unfortunately, I can only speculate on these contradictions since I was not alive in the 1890s or 1903. But I'll get back to those issues later. I don't want to get ahead of our story. So, back on track. First, I think it is worth mentioning that, according to recent research, there were more than 1,500 articles published in newspapers across the United States containing reports of sightings of airships during the years 1896 and 1897. And perhaps a third of these articles were skeptical, or outright mocking, or were hoaxes, or were stories about hoaxes. We will come back to these type of articles a little bit later. Anyway, moving on, it is unknown and probably unknowable today, 120 years later, as to whether there really was an airship. However, as we will discuss later in this episode, it is not an impossibility. And assuming that most of the reports of sightings were genuine, it is also unknown whether more than one airship might have existed, or even several, especially considering the large number of alleged sightings. Unfortunately, nearly all of the newspaper articles in 1897 were written using the singular phrase, the airship. Apparently, the possibility of the existence of more than one airship did not even occur to the typical reporter of 1897. So, please keep this in mind whenever I quote from any news article about a sighting that refers to, quote-unquote, the airship, since it is possibly an inaccurate phrase. Assuming, of course, that the sightings, as reported, were genuine. Now, at this point, I want to be crystal clear about something. In discussing the airship sightings of the 1890s, I am not in any way talking about UFOs or flying saucers. I am aware that in the 1960s and 1970s, when some of these old newspaper articles were rediscovered by various researchers investigating the history of the UFO phenomena, many of them quickly jumped to the hypothesis that the airships must actually have been flying saucers. This theory was soon included in several major articles and books regarding UFO sightings. And some people still believe this to be true. However, in the present day, even people who believe in the existence of flying saucers generally do not think that the airships were UFOs or any other kind of spacecraft. And neither do I. Furthermore, if you actually look at any newspaper articles from 1897 that mention visitors from outer space in the context of airship sightings, they are all, and I really do mean all, stories that were clearly printed as jokes or hoaxes. And personally, I am appalled by the handful of UFO researchers who are apparently so lacking in a sense of humor or even common sense that they do not seem to be able to grasp the difference between a newspaper article written as satire versus one written as straight news. Well, at least that's what I think about that. So, with that issue out of the way, let's get back to our story. Here's the thing. If you or anyone were to do any significant amount of research about this topic on the internet, you would mostly find articles regarding alleged sightings of airships in the western United States and perhaps some reports from cities in the Midwest, like Milwaukee, Fort Wayne, Chicago, and Kalamazoo, following the ones from the West. This is also the general outline that you will find in books about the topic, including some very serious books that have been published in the current decade of the 2000s. Well, about a year or two ago, I happened to hear a podcast that was having an episode about the 1897 airship mystery. It was a show based in Texas, and the hosts were talking about the reported sightings from that state. I'm sorry to say I don't remember the name of the show, because at the time I had just begun listening to podcasts of any kind. I had found the show completely by accident, and my memory of it is extremely vague, other than that it was hosted by two men who both had a strong Texas twang. Anyway, after listening to that show, I suddenly became curious, I don't know why, as to whether in 1897 there had been any sightings of airships in Ohio, the state where I live. I thought to myself, I've lived here my whole life, and even though I was remotely aware of the airship story, I knew I had never heard about any alleged sightings in Ohio. So I looked on the internet, and I hit a dead end almost immediately. I found no website or article that mentioned any airship sightings in Ohio. But then I remembered that the Cleveland Public Library has a digital, searchable archive of copies of the Cleveland Plain Dealer going all the way back to 1845. And anyone in Northeast Ohio with a library card is able to use this archive at no cost. So I went to the library website, logged in, and did a search of the Plain Dealer for the years 1896 and 1897. And almost immediately, I found numerous articles with reports of sightings of airships in Ohio by all sorts of sober, respectable people. There were no reported sightings in 1896, but plenty for 1897. My curiosity led me to look for reports of sightings in newspapers from other cities and towns in Ohio. I soon discovered that during the year 1897, there were dozens of communities, both big and small, throughout Ohio, in which reputable citizens reported that they had seen an airship moving across the sky over their community. In this episode, we will share some of those eyewitness reports with you. And let me tell you, nearly all of these sightings are from articles that probably have not seen the light of day in 120 years. So now, having said that, our story begins in April 1897 in western Ohio. For real this time. Starting during the second week of that month, newspapers throughout Ohio published reports of various people in Nebraska, Indiana, and Illinois who claimed to have seen an airship flying in the sky. By the end of that week, those same newspapers, and many others, were filled with reports of airship sightings over several towns in Ohio, all fairly near to the Indiana border. Specifically, Cassetown in southwestern Ohio, followed by Dunkirk, Kenton, and Bluffton, which are located in northwestern Ohio. For example, on April 14th, at about 7 p.m., several well-known citizens of Kenton reported seeing an airship traveling overhead. A day later, so did several residents of the nearby community of Dunkirk, including the town marshal and a number of men working at the railroad tower. They described it as being about 200 feet overhead and resembling a wagon bed with large wings extending on either side, along with a propeller and a bright lamp at each end, and that it looked large enough to hold a dozen men. At this point, I will interject for a moment to say that I, personally, do not give much credibility to the estimates of height or speed as given in many of the 1897 news reports. At best, they were simply wild guesses. I mean, for example, I see helicopters over my neighborhood practically every day, but I definitely would not trust my mind to correctly guess how high or how fast any given helicopter was traveling. Anyway, around the same time, April 15th to be exact, the Cincinnati Commercial Tribune reported that a number of reputable citizens of Hillsborough had seen the airship at about 10:30 p.m. the night before, and that red lights were plainly visible. Hillsborough, by the way, is also in southwest Ohio. A few days later, the Bluffton News contained a report that several young men in that community had excitedly declared that they had seen the flying machine traveling over the town on the previous evening. A day later, on April 16th, the Cincinnati Inquirer reported that James McKenzie, a well-known and respected farmer, then living about a mile north of Cassetown, had been engaged in feeding his hogs the previous evening when he was startled by a strange noise that he heard overhead. And, upon looking up, he saw what he first thought was a large, noisy bird. Then, looking more carefully, he now realized that it was not a bird at all, but a mechanical object with wings by which it propelled itself through the air, along with what appeared to be a large rudder. He estimated the object to have been approximately 150 feet from the earth, and that it emitted a sound that he compared to distant music. According to the newspaper, Mr. McKenzie had not previously heard or read anything about the recent alleged sightings of an airship, so he was not on the lookout for anything of the kind. But now, after learning of the airship, he was of the opinion that it was the object that he had seen over his farm. Now, it may seem, based on what I have said so far, that the sightings of airships were only from small towns. Well, although that may have been true about the first few reported sightings, it did not stay that way. For example, on April 16th, the Akron Beacon Journal reported that there had been a sighting of a quote-unquote huge airship by numerous residents of the North Hill neighborhood of Akron. Unfortunately, rather than give any further details by interviewing neighborhood residents, the article instead went on to ridicule the sighting, implying that those who had reported seeing the airship must have been drunk at the time, and that obviously must have been the reason why they were able to see the object so clearly. I'm guessing this article was intended to be sort of like the old stereotype of drunks seeing pink elephants, but in this case, the reporter was apparently implying that the thing they saw was a flying machine rather than a pink elephant. A few days later, another Akron newspaper, the Akron Times-Democrat, published a much more serious article in regard to the alleged sighting of an airship by the residents of the North Hill neighborhood, specifically featuring the details given by a woman named Elizabeth Kite, the 21-year-old wife of an iron mill worker.
About 7 o'clock on Friday night, I saw bright lights in the sky just beneath the clouds. I knew they weren't stars because they were moving in a steady southwesterly course across the sky. I told my husband Thomas, my daughter Ava, and then Mr. Roeder, who is the grocery store next door to us. They all looked, and they saw the lights too. My husband and Mr. Roeder said that the lights were attached to an airship, one of those flying machines that has been written about in the newspapers.
On April 17th, Both the Sandusky Register and the Cleveland Plain Dealer published reports of sightings of an airship being clearly seen over Sandusky on the previous evening. This ship was claimed to have been witnessed by a large number of local citizens, including a clerk from the mayor's office. One group of individuals not only said that they had seen the airship, but were willing to swear an affidavit under oath. In addition, according to the article in the Plain Dealer, the sightings had become the talk of the town in Sandusky. And not long after that, on April 23rd, a man named E.H. Hinman in Elyria was quoted in a newspaper report in regard to his recent sighting of an airship. Now, who exactly was E.H. Hinman? Well, at the time, he was the judge of the probate court in Lorain County, and this is what he said.
Well, I guess it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. Got up to feed my baby and looked out the window and saw what I suppose is that famed airship. It was shaped just like a Pittsburgh Stogie. Had a bunch of lights on it. I'd say it hovered over Elyria for a good 10 minutes or so, about 1,000 to 3,000 feet up. The lights were intense, all glistening and glittering. And if I'm not mistaken, it had a short blue tail on it with a brass ring around it. I went to call my wife to enjoy the sight with me, but it disappeared while I was trying to wake her. It truly was a wonder.
Around the same time as the sighting by Judge Hinman, there was a report of an airship being seen over Marion, Ohio, published in the Marion Daily Star. The article quoted H.R. Bollander, superintendent of the Ohio Bicycle Works, who was described as being something of an amateur astronomer. He said that he had been out in his yard with his telescope at about 8 p.m., hoping for a glimpse of the planet Jupiter. Instead, he had been surprised to see the bright lights of an airship in the sky, moving in a southwesterly direction. He described it as being very high up, cigar-shaped, and that it had a bright, spreading light. A similar report of a sighting of a flying machine traveling over the city was given by John Reed, a railway watchman. Although most people in 1897 reacted to these news reports with a feeling of amazement, respectful skepticism, or good humor, it seems to have triggered an unhealthy emotional reaction in others. For example, in Findlay, Ohio, a widow named Eleanor Woodruff, a member of a prominent and respected local family, apparently had a mental break of some kind. She went to her next-door neighbor one morning in April and requested him to build her an airship that day, according to plans that she had written. He put her off with an evasive answer, but when evening came, she went out onto a busy sidewalk, pointing at a faraway star, and began shouting at random groups of people.
Do you see that bright light way up in the sky? It's my airship! My neighbor built it for me. I gave him a drawing of what it should look like, and I wrote it down how it should work, and he made it. He must be trying it out, and as soon as it lands, he'll give it to me, and I'm going to fly it on a trip all around the world. Just wait until it comes back down. Do you want to go? I'll take anyone who wants to go with me.
According to reports in various Ohio newspapers, Mrs. Woodruff unfortunately became violent and was taken to the Toledo Insane Asylum. Evidently, this was not an easy task. It was reported in the Cincinnati Inquirer that, due to the fact that Mrs. Woodruff was, quote, large and powerfully built, unquote, it required 4 men in order to place her on the train to Toledo. This incident involving Mrs. Woodruff was one of the 2 or 3 most unusual news articles that I came across in researching news reports in relation to the airship sightings of 1897. I have mentioned it only as an extreme example of the fact that it was common for newspaper editors and reporters to publish articles implying that the sightings of airships were coming solely from people who were lunatics, drunks, or pranksters. It is my personal opinion that this may have been the only reason why this bizarre incident became a story that was covered in newspapers across the state of Ohio. But, on the other hand, it is again worth noting that most news reports in regard to the alleged sightings of airships over Ohio tended to be written as straight news, or were at least open-minded about the subject, because the vast majority of observations were coming from ordinary, sober, respectable people. For example, the Columbus Sunday Morning Press reported that on the evening of April 18th, members of a church choir, while traveling through the town of Logan, Ohio, were suddenly startled by a flash of light overhead, and upon looking up, saw a large object hovering over the town, moving at a slow rate of speed. They estimated the airship to be about 35 to 40 feet long and the size of a large boat. A doctor in Cutler, Ohio, was another person who claimed to have seen an airship, and he also compared it to the size of a large boat, specifically a steamboat, according to the Marietta Daily Register. A few days later, a newspaper in Athens, Ohio, stated that several reputable citizens of the nearby town of Coolville reported that on the previous Saturday night, between 9 and 10 p.m., that they had clearly and distinctly saw an airship. They described it as being of immense size and having three lights of different colors. But at the same time that serious stories were being printed with descriptions of observations by very credible members of the public, there were also plenty of silly stories and hoax articles regarding airship sightings. And sometimes they were even printed in the same newspaper on the same day. However, for the most part, those fake articles are easy to identify because they are typically filled with corny jokes or wild claims and exaggerations. For example, a newspaper in Ashland claimed that an airship had taken 5 tons of coal and water from a train yard. A newspaper in Cincinnati published a long, ridiculous, obviously fake interview with the pilot and crew of an airship and reporting that the engine operated by the use of a perpetual motion machine. A newspaper in Akron printed a story that an unidentified local man had seen an airship by making a careful microscopic investigation through the bottom of a beer glass, and that, contrary to all other reports, the craft had the shape of a sea serpent and was surrounded by a glowing light that came from fire spouting from its mouth. The newspaper went on to say that the man claimed to have made 16 examinations in 16 minutes. My personal favorite among these type of joke articles is one that was published in the Cincinnati Commercial Tribune on April 15th, which quoted a tugboat captain named Joseph Singler, who described his alleged encounter with an airship while he was on his boat on Lake Erie.
On Wednesday, I was out on my fishing tug, the Sea Wing, headed for Cleveland Harbor, about 15 miles from the pier. I noticed a queer-looking boat about 2 miles away. It had a cabin covering about 1/4 of the deck surface. A man in a checked hunting suit, about 25 years of age, and wearing a long peaked cap, was fishing from the boat. A woman sat at his side. A boy of about 10 years sat at her feet. As my tug got near this curious craft, I saw a brightly decorated object which had been lying on the framework. It was slowly inflated and rose to the length of the ropes by which it was attached to it. It was a balloon, cylinder-shaped, about 50 feet long. Slowly, the ship rose into the air until it stood directly over my tug, about 500 feet from the water. A large swordfish was then dropped from the airship
the fish was stunned by its fall. So I picked it up, and it is now on exhibition in a tank at the harbor in Cleveland. The ship had a wheel similar to those on steamers. This acted as a propeller, both on land and on the water. After moving aimlessly about for a short time, a sail was dropped from the airship, and it was carried away by the wind.
By the way, I did a little research about Captain Singler, and I was almost surprised to learn that he was a real person. I found him listed in U.S. maritime records from the 1890s. I have a feeling that he was somebody with a lot of good tales to tell, both real and imaginary. I think it's too bad that his airship story is the only one that ever made it into print. Oh well. But in contrast to this very silly story from Cincinnati regarding the alleged sighting by Captain Singler of an airship near the Cleveland Harbor, let's now take a look at some genuine news reports that were printed in the newspapers of Cleveland at the time. First, on April 29th, the Cleveland Leader, which was a very popular paper at the time, declared in a headline that many Clevelanders had beheld the airship hovering overhead on the prior evening. The accompanying article stated, quote, "It was first seen at about 7:30 in the western heavens at an elevation of about 45 degrees. It was moving slowly eastward, and in 15 or 20 minutes it had reached the zenith, from which position it drifted towards the eastern horizon. It was, apparently, 1,000 feet above the surface of the earth," unquote. Interestingly, one of the many observers on that evening was a reporter for the Cleveland Leader who stated flatly that he had no doubt as to what he had witnessed, since, at the time, the atmosphere was as clear as it ever gets in Cleveland in the early evening, and there was little or no wind. The reporter went on to say that, at first, the ship appeared like a bright bar of light, but as it continued to hang in the evening sky, it seemed less brilliant, looking more like a collection of small lights shining through a haze. He concluded his article by saying, quote, "If this is the same thing that has been seen in other places, it is easy to understand the amazement of the people, for there is something mysterious about it, something which has not yet been explained," unquote. On the very same date, April 29th, the Cleveland Plain Dealer reported on a sighting of an airship by a man named Judd Wickham, a cashier in the office of the county clerk. Mr. Wickham gave this explanation of what he had seen.
"I was standing near the corner of Wilson and Euclid Avenue at about 10:30 o'clock last night when I happened to look up at the heavens. I saw what at first looked like a headlight on a locomotive, and all I could see was the blinding glare. And then it slowly turned around and I could see the shaft of light across the sky. Of course, I thought of the airship which the papers had been telling about. Finally, I could dimly see the body of the thing. It was shaped like a cigar, and right above it was a balloon-shaped affair. It seemed to be stationary for quite a while, and then it moved slowly off to the south. You fellas may think I'm kidding, but I'm giving it to you straight."
At this point, I will mention one small bit of trivia for any listeners in Cleveland. In 1906, Wilson Avenue was renamed East 55th Street. Anyway, moving along, there was another article regarding Mr. Wickham, which was published on May 9th. Evidently, following his original interview, he had become a victim of ridicule, including by practical jokers, who flew a large toy balloon with an attached lantern, reflector, and small flag over his house and yard while he was working in his flower garden one evening. They were apparently attempting to trick him into thinking that it was another airship, this time over his neighborhood. Thankfully, he was not fooled. However, I have learned from looking into the 1897 airship mystery in detail that it was common for hoaxers and pranksters to send up hydrogen or helium balloons or Japanese lanterns filled with hot air once the sky began to get dim, in an effort to fool people into thinking that they were seeing an airship flying overhead. But it is very clear, based on newspaper reports, that almost nobody was tricked. And I'll tell you something. Even though it is now 120 years later, and I learned that Mr. Wickham had passed away in 1960 at age 92, I still felt bad for him, being mocked and laughed at for what he had said he had seen. Especially since the only other time his name was ever printed in the newspaper was his obituary. Well, moving on with our story, Mr. Wickham was not the last person whom the plane dealer reported as seeing an airship drifting over the city. On May 5th, it published an interview with L.M. Woolwine, a traveling salesman from Nashville, Tennessee, who had been standing at the corner of Seneca Street and Superior Avenue at about 7:45 p.m. the previous evening. I will interrupt for just a moment to mention that Seneca is another street that was renamed in 1906. It is now known as West 3rd Street. Mr. Edmondson said that he was walking past the public library in downtown Cleveland when he saw what first appeared to be two very bright lights shining in the sky. But soon after, he was able to see the outline of a ship, which was making its way at a uniform rate in a southwesterly direction. Mr. Edmondson then went on to say that the lights took a sudden dip as if the ship had pitched violently, and the fact that they went with the same velocity and took exactly the same path in the air made it clear that he was genuinely seeing an airship or other flying machine and not a balloon or other trickery. The article in the Plain Dealer ends with the comment that, quote, "The statements of Mr. Edmondson are a close match to those made by Mr. Woolwine and Mr. Sloss, the owner of the Hotel Imperial. And as there is no possibility for collusion, and as Mr. Edmondson is such a well-known and respected citizen, the affair remains unexplained," unquote. Well, I could go on and on with many similar reports from newspapers throughout Ohio, with alleged sightings by numerous other people in cities and towns across the state. But that is all they were, alleged sightings. Is there any concrete proof? The answer is, maybe. On the evening of April 24th, at about 7 p.m., according to various news reports, Mr. Stephen W. Beebe, a resident of the East End of Columbus, was sitting on a porch swing behind his farmhouse with his daughter Lydia, age 16. They were having a conversation about her schoolwork, until they were very suddenly surprised.
"Finally got all of my homework finished, Daddy. So it's nice to sit out here on the porch and just relax with you. Especially since the weather's so beautiful today."
"Daddy? Look up! What is that? Up in the sky! Do you see it?"
"Well, I'll be darned. That must be one of those new airships that they've been talking about in the newspapers."
"Daddy, watch out! That thing, it's falling! It's falling right out of the sky!"
"I can't believe it. I'm looking right at it, and I just can't believe it."
"Oh no! Oh no! Daddy, it's heading straight for our barn! It's going to crash into the barn!"
"Oh no, it's on fire. The whole barn. We better get the fire department before it spreads."
Yep. According to a news report on April 25th in the Columbus Sunday Press, the operator of an airship evidently lost control of the craft and it crashed into Mr. Beebe's barn, igniting it on fire. According to the article, the fire had been caused by the beam and lights of the ship hitting a large pile of scrap paper and other rubbish within the barn, and an alarm for the fire department was immediately turned in. The article ends with this statement, quote, "There are good reputable citizens living in the East End who are willing to testify that they saw something fall from the skies. This something had all the appearance of an airship." Unquote. Now, when I first saw this report, which appeared in a number of newspapers across Ohio, I was curious because I could not find any follow-up story. This made me wonder if Mr. Beebe was a real person and if the whole thing might be a hoax. Fake news, as we call it today. So, I did a little research, and I soon discovered that Mr. Beebe was not only a real person, but that he was also a bit of an inventor. In January 1901, he was granted a patent for a hairdryer, which he said he had designed to be used by women after bathing. But strangely, after that, I could find no record of him, not in death records or even in the U.S. Census, for any year whatsoever. Nevertheless, this story, describing the crash of an airship in April 1897 and its setting fire to a barn owned by Mr. Beebe, an actual, verifiable human being, may possibly be the most close we will ever come to hard evidence of any alleged airship which so many people claim to have seen in the sky over Ohio that year. Now, at this point, I could continue with quotes from dozens of other articles that reported sightings of airships in Ohio by this or that reputable individual, but I think I have already shared more than enough examples, and there is no good reason to add 100 more. And, as I mentioned earlier, public opinion at the time was pretty strongly divided. For example, two major respected Ohio newspapers, the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Cincinnati Commercial Tribune, both referred to the existence of the airship as an accomplished fact. On the other hand, the famed inventor, Thomas Edison, who had been born and raised in Ohio, considered all reports of airship sightings to be, quote unquote, pure fake. But I take his opinion with a huge grain of salt, since he also stated that any successful aircraft or flying machine would have no commercial value and would, at best, be nothing more than a toy. At the time, however, Edison was such a huge celebrity that his opinion on the airship issue was probably printed in nearly every newspaper in the United States. It may possibly be for this reason that many newspapers either ignored or refused to publish stories of airship sightings. For example, in Ohio, on May 19th, the editor of the Canal Winchester Times announced that he would publish no article about any sighting of an airship unless he could ascertain to his satisfaction that it was true. So, as far as sightings, I guess I'll leave it at that. I wasn't there. Neither were you. Only God knows what was really going on. However, even saying that, I guess the most important question is, were the sightings real? Is it possible that one or more actual aircraft flew in the sky over Ohio in 1897? I think the answer is, well, perhaps. Here is what I know. In the past decade, there have been at least three serious, lengthy books written about the airship mystery. And in all of them, it is pointed out that in 1897, there were mechanical engines strong enough to lift and power a large airship, and construction materials that would have been appropriate and functional for the purpose, especially if the design was similar to what we would now call a blimp, a zeppelin, or dirigible. And since in many alleged sightings, the airship was described as being cigar-shaped, it is possible that something like this is what they had seen. In fact, as early as 1863, there was an aircraft, more or less a blimp, that had been built by a scientist named Dr. Solomon Andrews, and it had actually been tested and flew in front of U.S. President Abraham Lincoln for possible use in the Civil War for either spying or dropping bombs on the enemy. According to government records, President Lincoln was impressed and asked for the Army to investigate whether the craft could actually be functional for the military purposes suggested by Dr. Andrews. Unfortunately, it was soon discovered that although the ship could get off the ground and reach a fairly high distance above the earth, the inventor had failed to reveal the fact that he had no method for controlling the direction in which it moved, and so the military had no way to use it, at least not in any way that was practical. So, perhaps, the sightings of airships in 1897, if they were genuine, indicate that someone had solved the navigation issue. However, one thing that we do know from the undisputed historical facts is that the existence of an airship in 1897 was realistically possible, and not just speculation or conjecture, whether by me or anyone else. In addition, it is also worth mentioning that prior to the year 1897, no less than 6 patents were granted for an operational airship. Perhaps the airship which people were seeing in 1897 was one that had been created by the owner of one of these patents, trying out his patent design in real life. Now, let's assume for a moment that the sightings were real. This brings us to a bigger question. Why did the sightings come to a complete stop at the end of May 1897? Not just in Ohio, but everywhere. Again, I have nothing but speculation. Maybe the inventor or investors ran out of money. Maybe they saw what Thomas Edison had said and decided that people would agree with him that airships would never be more than an expensive toy. Maybe the airship crash in Columbus, if it did in fact occur, gave the inventor or investors a few second thoughts about continuing, since someone could be seriously injured or killed. Or maybe somebody was killed in an accident and the whole thing was somehow covered up and everyone connected to the project just quietly backed away. Well, I have no idea. There's no way to know at this point in time, 120 years later. But I think it comes down to this. If a functioning airship did exist in 1897, it appears that someone simply decided to bring the entire project to a halt. And so, that was that. And just as quick as the sightings had begun, they ended. Without any announcement, without any fanfare, without any explanation.
Jim, can I add something?
Sure, Annabelle.
You were mentioning how the airship stories just seemed to have suddenly disappeared from the newspapers after the spring of 1897. Well, here's a little trivia about that. A year later, in 1898, if you looked in a newspaper, the only mention of an airship would probably be about a new play that was traveling across the U.S. and Canada. A romantic comedy with the name The Airship, in which a group of young women build a flying machine to travel to Alaska in search of gold and husbands. Unfortunately, after 1898, the play was apparently never performed again. Everything connected to the play including the script, has apparently vanished, except for some very pretty posters and newspaper reviews of performances.
Thank you, Annabelle. At this point, I think I will add that my two biggest difficulties in writing the script for this episode was, number one, in deciding among the hundreds of reports of sightings which ones to feature, and number two, trying to work around the fact that nearly all newspapers in 1897 used the singular phrase, the airship, when it was very possible that there were two or more, considering the sheer number of sightings, and of course, assuming the genuineness of those sightings as reported. With that having been said, and as you might have already guessed, we are now at the end of our story. So, we would like to give our deepest and sincerest thanks to the kind and wonderful podcasters and listeners to this podcast who contributed their voice talents to this episode. Specifically,
Krista
from the 36 Times podcast,
Sean
from the Second X podcast,
Steve
from the Drift and Ramble podcast,
Ron's
Amazing Stories podcast,
Annabelle DC
from Annabelle Audios,
Susan,
a listener and fellow member of the Facebook group Podcasts We Listen To, and last but not least,
Rico,
another listener and fellow member of the Podcast We Listen To Facebook group, and who is also part of the Sofa King podcast family. We have included their full names, voice credits, and links to their podcasts, etc., in the show notes. And, by the way, just to be clear, when I say voice credits, I mean that you can see the specific role which each person performed on this episode if you go to the show notes. And the same thing is true in regard to the show notes for any previous episode. Now, having clarified that, let me again say thanks to everyone who contributed their voice to this episode. You have no idea how much we appreciate each of you for being a friend of our show. Okay, at this point, we want to thank an extra wonderful group of listeners. Specifically, those of you who are kind and thoughtful enough to write and post a review of our podcast on iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts. Hey, Annabelle.
Yes, Jim?
Here you go. You told me you wanted to handle the shout-outs for the listeners who left reviews of our podcast. Personally, I don't think you completely trusted what I might say. So, for the time being, I'll turn the show over to you.
Hello, wonderful listeners. Here is today's edition of the Forgotten News Podcast Review Shoutouts. My name is Annabelle, and I'll be your host for now. So let's start with the first review that comes from Gromit Esquire, and they said that they really enjoyed our first podcast. Thank you so much, Gromit Esquire. We're really happy that you enjoy the podcast. Next, the wonderful five-star review comes from BossyPants16, and they said that they loved the first episode and are looking forward to more. Thank you so much for your wonderful review, BossyPants. The next review comes from That Sports Card, and they left a wonderful five-star review once again. Thank you so much, That Sports Card. We're really happy that you enjoy the podcast. Then the next review comes from Strange Animal Podcast, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for your awesome five-star review. And by the way, Kate is the host of that Strange Animal Podcast, and she is a friend of our show. She also mentioned in her review that she thinks that the research is really good, and she really enjoys how the host presents quotes and sources. So thank you so much, Kate. The review after this one is a little bit more peculiar because it's not an exactly overly positive review, but it comes from 753 SPQR, and they still left a 3-star review. Their review consisted mostly of constructive criticism, which is really fine, because obviously we can't be perfect every single time, you know? We can't please everyone, and that's quite all right. So thank you so much for the constructive criticism, and we'll definitely take note of it. The next review comes from Oki Lane, and it is once again a 5-star review. Thank you so much, Oki Lane. We're so happy that you liked it. Then, the next review comes from RWTXRH, and they once again left a 5-star review. Thank you so much for your wonderful review and for supporting our podcast. The next review came from Penny Was Taken, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for your great 5-star review. Oh, and by the way, Penny is the host of the Murder She Spoke podcast, and she is also a friend of our show. She mentioned in her review that she really enjoyed how Jim put so much thought into crafting these stories. So thank you so much, Penny. We're so happy you like it. Then the second to last review comes from Mary. And just to quote a little bit of what she said is, first, what sounds like a Disney princess warns the listener about potential content. Hey, wait, that's me. Thank you so much. That's really sweet, actually. I'm really flattered. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mary, for supporting our podcast. It's really appreciated. And then the final review comes from CD Speed, and they said that they love the old news and this podcast, so thank you so much for your wonderful review and for the 5-star review as well. Thank you. So that's it for today's edition of the Forgotten News Podcast Review Shoutouts. Thank you once again to everyone that decided to leave a review and to support our podcast. It really means a lot to all of us. Thank you so much.
Hey, wow. Thank you, Annabelle. And also, my personal thank you to everyone who took the time to leave a review on iTunes. It really means a lot to us. By the way, speaking of iTunes, we would truly appreciate it if the rest of our listeners would take a moment to go to iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, and leave a rating and review for this podcast. Thanks in advance for doing that. And I promise we will give a shout out to anyone who gives us a review in the future. We will also give a shout out to anyone who makes a contribution to the show. We've even made it easy for you. There's a link at the bottom of the show notes page where you can just click and give a contribution of any amount, large or small. Even a dollar would help offset our time and expenses. Also, I have a special offer which is open to all of our listeners. If you contribute $5 or more, I will substitute your name for the name of an anonymous, unknown, or unidentified person or reporter from an actual old-time newspaper article that is quoted on a future episode of the show. Here's how it works. If you make a contribution of $5 or more, I will contact you by email to find out if there's any particular type of article that you would prefer, and if you'd rather have your name as a reporter or as a person who is quoted in an article. By the way, speaking of shout-outs, I will now give one to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for the music used on this episode. I have included specific credits for him and his music in the show notes. I will also now give a shout-out to freesound.org for the sound effects used on this episode. Oh, one last thing. If you are a regular listener to the podcast, you obviously are aware that we usually have background music throughout the episode, but that this episode was recorded with no background music, or almost none. Please let us know if you would prefer future episodes to have background music or no background music. We would love to hear your comments, feedback, opinions, ideas, or thoughts about that, or anything else that you might like to say in regard to this episode or any past episode or the show in general. So With that in mind, our email address is forgottennewspodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to type that as all one word. There are no hyphens or dashes. So, for email, just to be clear, you type forgottennewspodcast@gmail.com as if it were all one word. We also have a Facebook page and a discussion group. You can make your comments there on Facebook if you'd like. If you don't already belong, just go to the search bar on Facebook and type Forgotten News Podcast, and it will take you right there. We are hoping that the story we have presented on this episode will jumpstart some discussion. What do you think about the airship mystery? Did it actually happen? Or, if you have a strong opinion about background music, why not share it with us and other listeners? Join us on Facebook and tell us what you think. You can also contact and follow us on Twitter and give us your thoughts about almost anything. But please take note, our Twitter handle is @newsforgotten and not Forgotten News. So, long story short, please feel free to use any of these methods to interact with us. We sincerely want to hear from you. Finally, I encourage you to take a look at the show notes for this episode or any other episode that interests you. And as far as I know, every platform that carries our podcast also includes our show notes in one way or another. If you have any trouble finding our show notes, or if you have no idea what I'm talking about, simply send me an email and I'll give you a direct link. And now, with all that having been said, goodbye everyone. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Forgotten News Podcast. You will now be returned back to the present day, and we hope that we can count on you to join us for our next episode.
The function of the imagination is not to make strange things settled, but to make settled things strange.